Hello, Space Junkies, and welcome to What a Piece of Junk, episode number 93. I am your amenable host, Scott Bultman. You know, 93, that was the year, 1993, that my sister graduated from high school. But you know who didn't graduate from high school in 1993? My inimitable co-host, the man of a thousand nicknames, our very own Gooey Chewy, Dave Phil Cloney, Mr. Nathan Miracle. Nathan, how's it going?
It's going very well. You know, back in 1993, I graduated from the fourth grade, something like that.
Yeah.
Moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, actually.
Well, that was a big year because if you hadn't lived in Charlotte, we probably never would have met each other.
That's true. And in 1993, as every true Southerner knows, we had a blizzard. Mm-hmm. The blizzard of 93 in March. In Bristol, Tennessee, we had 18 inches of snow. That is the most snow I have ever seen to date at least in a place where I live.
Yeah, yeah. And not nearly as much snow fell on us when we were at Star Wars Celebration Chicago, but Star Wars fans still used it as a great excuse to do epic photo shoots in their Snowtrooper and General Veers cosplays, because that was a really cool moment to see those guys out there with the snow falling on them.
Yeah, I was glad that I had my Chewbacca jacket, because yes. I love wearing that in the snow. It's great because the snow doesn't melt immediately when it touches the fur.
Right, right. So you look just like Chewie did on Hoth.
Exactly. Or on Starkiller Base.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good point.
Because I hear it's cold there.
Oh, you're cold?
Even for Wookiees.
Good stuff. Well, this episode, we are pleased to be discussing even more good Star Wars stuff. And in our case, that is Star Wars Andor, episodes 4 and 5. We didn't have time to record last week to talk about episode 4, but we will be just lumping them together. So you get ye old twofer, but not quite episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Although there were a few feelings here and there of some prequel era stuff, specifically during scenes on Coruscant, where there's a bit of hustle and bustle and shininess going on. But we'll talk about that more as we jump into the full episodes, which we were going to do some Star Wars news segments in this episode of the podcast, but there's a lot to get to when it comes to Andor, so we're just going to jump right into it. Plus, Nathan and I are eager to go ahead and get deep into the discussion. So, Nathan, we've got episode 4 and episode 5 here. What were your initial reactions to both episodes?
Personally, I love them. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of action in these episodes, but I kind of expect that because we're setting up a big heist, and heists usually don't happen until the third act of whatever they're in. So I do think we might almost be losing a little bit in that we're watching it week by week. So it feels too much is happening in these two episodes. But I know that there's going to be a big payoff in the latter third of the series. So I'm very excited to see where it goes. And I think as long as you watch it with that open mind of, hey, this isn't a standalone episode, this is part of a greater series, the episodes are great.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've seen some folks talking online about how they feel like, this show is a little too slow, or it's taking it a while to find its footing, etc. And I feel like that's only true per se when you're comparing it to to other Star Wars productions. But you know what? We'll talk about this a little bit later in the episode because it's probably the biggest criticism that I've seen of the show online that has any merit. I have seen plenty of other criticisms, but most of the time that's just somebody trying to monetize their hate. You know, the old fandom menace, as it were.
Indeed.
So for my initial reactions, I think I enjoyed episode 5 a bit more than I did episode 4. And it isn't so much because of the pacing of episode 5. It's more that in episode 4, we had a lot of ISB hijinks, if you will, that are the very opposite of hijinks. I mean, we literally had a scene where Deirdre,
Lo Jinx,
yes. Deirdre, the blonde-haired lady who is, you know, kind of the antithesis of Andor here, trying to track down what she thinks is probably some sort of organized rebellion, fomenting out there by tracking their logistics, because it's and I quote, too random to be random. I'm like,
I mean, that is a real thing, though, Scott.
It's a real boring thing.
Okay, well, as a math guy, in statistics, there is a certain amount of randomness you expect, but randomness in and of itself creates patterns. That's what the whole bell curve is. You know, when you drop a whole bunch of balls into a kind of a Plinko board, you know, they tend to go towards the center. And if you make everything totally random and it's completely even across the board, that's too random to be random. And I see that I have put my co-host to sleep.
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry. Did I accidentally walk into a Star Trek episode? My bad. Anyway.
Yes. The statistical probability episode specifically.
The one with Chris Sarandon. So you take, Prince Humperdinck and you make him into a guy who messes with probability.
Yeah, it works. Mm-hmm. Well, at least it did for me. So you didn't like the pattern analysis there.
I didn't like the pattern analysis scenes. On a different show, I could understand it. Like I said, like I just made that Star Trek joke. It would be more at home on an episode of Star Trek, especially Star Trek The Next Generation, in which Geordi and Data have that conversation with each other. Then they go to Captain Picard or Commander Riker, and they're like, the Ferengi can't possibly have done this at random, because here's how the – yeah. It's fake randomness. They're trying to make it look random. Yeah. Wibbly wobbly, messy stuff.
See that. There's some anomaly out in space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there was actually an episode of Deep Space Nine where there's an alien gambling device.
That's the one with Chris Sarandon. That's what I'm saying.
I was thinking of the one with the genetically enhanced the jackpack.
No. Yeah,
but where they start talking about how, well, you know, we project that the Dominion will win this war, so our best bet is to actually surrender now and foment this rebellion over here on Cardassia Prime.
Yeah. No, I was definitely talking about the one where Chris Sarandon is using the alien gambling device.
Yes. Okay. Sorry, I didn't realize that was Prince Humperdinck.
Yep. And now that you know it, you'll go back and watch it sometime this week and go, oh my gosh, Humperdinck, Humperdinck, Humperdinck. Anyway,
probably so.
All right, but this isn't a Princess Bride or a Star Trek podcast. It's a Star Wars podcast. And let me just be clear, I'm still enjoying the show as a whole. And definitely there is obviously creative space in the Star Wars galaxy for a story like this. It's just very different from most of the Star Wars stuff that we've seen before. Which is okay, because that's what streaming service like Disney Plus is allowing the creative types to do, is open up the stories to things that wouldn't really have been made as part of a movie or even much in the way of Star Wars animation. So I think that's good. I enjoyed episode 5 a good bit more, though, because I liked the way that they were doing the dry run for the heist and whatnot. And I enjoyed the way that Lieutenant Gorn was playing his assigned Imperial goons off against each other to make sure that they won't be downstairs in the warehouse area when Cassian and the rest of his crew come in to execute the heist to steal the Imperial payroll.
Yeah, that was a great little bit of reverse psychology. But hey, I thought you said this wasn't a Star Trek podcast.
Yeah.
What were you doing talking about those reptile guys?
Wrong Lieutenant Gorn, but...
But
it's cool that they're borrowing. Although, I think the joke that I've really resisted making this entire time on the podcast, now that we're covering Star Wars Andor, is the whole, how come we didn't see any blue people? And no, I'm not talking about Grand Admiral Thrawn. If it's on Andor, where are the Andorians?
Oh. I should have seen that one coming way sooner than I did.
You should have, but you didn't.
I was sitting here thinking, excellent. What is it about Smurfs?
Yes, space Smurfs for the win. All right. Well, anyway, before we jump into our five questions for episodes 4 and 5, we'll take a quick break so that you all can hear about the other great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Kevin. Please check out those awesome shows. Okay, Nathan, time for the five questions. Derek is unfortunately not available for us to record with him this episode, so we're just going to go around the table with you and I tête-à-tête. So,
very well.
What did you like most about these episodes? You can do, you know, 1 for 4 and 1 for 5, or just top of each or whatever.
Well, I'm going to go 1 for each. So the thing I liked most about episode 4 was Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Playing Luthen. And when he switched over from being, I'm the guy who's putting stuff together for the rebellion, into, I am the Coruscant elite,
yeah,
selling you these wonderful antiques.
Yeah.
Seeing him make that transformation just in real time, all he did was slick back his hair and change the way he waved his hands around. Totally different person.
Yeah. Like, now, do you feel like maybe he had a little bit of hairpiece going on? Or do you think he just, you know, restyled his existing hair? I thought he had a little bit of hairpiece going on.
So I think there's two ways to answer that question. I think the first is real world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably so. I think within the fiction of the Star Wars universe, though, it's supposed to be that he just slicked his hair back.
Okay, all right. I'll accept that. He's kind of like Master of Disguise, but, you know, he doesn't do anything too outlandish, so it looks natural.
Yeah, it's the blending in by, you know, it's the hiding by blending in rather than by actual hiding.
Yeah.
You know, he's right there. but no Imperial is going to walk in there and think that this guy is coordinating a rebellion.
Right, right.
Which is great. But when Andor meets him, or should I say
Ander,
when they meet, he's clearly the guy putting together the rebellion. So seeing the same actor switch between almost two different characters,
yeah,
was just stellar. Wonderful acting. And, you know, there's no shortage of good acting on this show, but he is just absolutely top notch. So that is my answer for episode 4.
Yeah.
For episode 5, my favorite part was when Ander said, we should switch sides. He's left-handed. Mm-hmm. I'm right-handed. Our guns should be pointed to the outside. And the reason that was my favorite bit is because I don't think we've had any reference to handedness in the Star Wars universe before this point. Now, that's not to say that we haven't had people, you know, using their right hand or their left hand to shoot blasters or swing lightsabers or whatnot, but it's never been brought up.
I think you're right. It was never been brought up, you know, as you by a line, right? By someone mentioning it by name. Although Luke makes it a point in Return of the Jedi to notice that he and his father are both right-handed, and they therefore at that point in time on the Death Star 2 have both gotten cybernetic hands because they're, you know,
they're cut off.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. That's cool. I really like that answer.
Yeah. But then it makes me wonder, what about alien species? Because humans are apparently predominantly right-handed, although some are at least somewhat ambidextrous.
Yeah.
Favors left but shoots right, or vice versa.
Yeah, Nimic is the guy who favors left but shoots right. And then, of course, I think one of the ladies in the Rebel team on Andor, Cassian made sure to point out that she was left-handed. Yeah.
She went around like, okay, tell me everybody's.
Which
showed that he was paying attention, which I also loved that piece of it. I like the handedness part a little more, but the fact that, it's like, yeah, I can give you all of these things that you didn't even know I was looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Well, that's similar to my favorite thing about Episode 5, which is also a minute detail thing, because that's, you know, an important part of a heist story. It's during the scene in the tent where Cassian is talking to the rest of the other two members of the team, and she's asking him to tell her how the launch lever works for the freighter. And he deduces very quickly that they don't know how it works, that he can say just about anything. And he won't answer their question. He just keeps going, "You don't know how it works. You don't know how it works." And he gets down to the point of saying, "What were you going to do if I didn't join the team?" And they're like, "We would have figured it out." And he goes, "No, you wouldn't have." Yeah.
Y'all would be dead.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really great part of Episode 5. And him trying to basically explain to them, after he gets outed for having the Kyber crystal that's worth a small fortune that Luthen gave to him, he basically tells them, "Yes, I'm a professional, but that means I'm so much better at all of this stuff than the rest of you. And without me, yeah, you're going to die. You're going to be totally boned."
So if you want to bug out now, you can do it. But don't blame it on me.
Right. Like,
I'm the one person here who knows what we're doing.
Right. Right. And my favorite thing, the thing I liked the most about Episode 4 was also dealing with Luthen as antiquities dealer, but I just loved them showing his antiquities shop and stuffing it to the gills with stuff that people like us would be all, "Oh my gosh, it's the thing from the thing." It's like that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio from, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Oh, and he's drinking the beer, you know. Anyway, or Captain America. I understood that reference from Avengers.
Yes.
So I loved seeing all the little artifacts in the background. Specifically, I loved seeing the stones from the Worlds Between Worlds. What the heck? How did Luthen get those? Mind-blowing stuff. And I wonder, it makes me think, though, that they're not going to do anything else with them. They were just there as a, hey, check this out.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. Either that or they're going to be absolutely critical to the plot, one or the other.
Right, yeah. It's Chekhov's rocks.
There's no way that they're going to be used but not be an absolutely critical thing. It's one extreme or the other.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Okay, so question two. What did you like least about these episodes?
I really haven't given that much thought. I guess for Episode 4, at least, I might agree with you that the ISB scenes were not exactly thrilling. Not that I didn't like seeing the ISB, but they did kind of draw out a little too much, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was a little weird to me to see kind of the infighting and within the ISB, because up to this point, the ISB has always been kind of a mysterious organization. Mm-hmm. And when they show up, like, everybody else snaps to attention.
Yeah.
You know, it's, it's like the Spanish Inquisition.
No one ever expects them.
But when they show up, you can bet that you're going to get poked with fluffy pillows. No, wrong Spanish Inquisition.
Mr. Thingy. All right.
But you know, this episode kind of humanized them in a weird way, in that they themselves are just another layer of bureaucracy. Whereas before, they had always kind of been secret police type, that you never knew when one would show up. It almost seemed like ISB agents operated with total authority and didn't have to report to anybody. And now we see that they do.
They were, when they're out in the field, they're autonomous, but yet they have their own hierarchy, you know. For me, it was weird to see the infighting be so above board, so blatant at that moment in time, you know, like when Deirdre and the other ISB agent that ends up getting, you know, that has jurisdiction over Ferrix, whose name I can't remember. But the two of them, she goes to his office and is all like, here's all the data that proves that this Starpath unit was stolen from somewhere that's actually in my jurisdiction. And he just looks right at her and says, look, before you start trying to climb the ladder of success, you've only been here for a short period of time. Maybe slow it down a bit before you try to, you know, advance your career to all these new heights and step on all of us peons on your way up the ladder. And she doesn't skip a beat and just basically tells him, I'm going to go talk to, you know, Director Dude Man and step on you peon as I climb my way up the ladder. And he's like, okay, fine, but don't blame me when you come falling back past me and I don't reach out to try to help you. So he's right. She definitely shouldn't be doing those things, but it just shows that a certain type of person often gets attracted to or assigned to the Imperial Security Bureau, because Dude Man already knows exactly what she's up to when she comes to his office to be all, you know, my jurisdiction.
Yeah. It's just a weird spot. Like I kind of expect some Imperial infighting. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had that all the way back to the original Star Wars with Admiral Mahdi and General Tage. And you know, this battle station is the most advanced. You know, the rebels don't pose any threat and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
The line from Mahdi is, this station's now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it. And I know that because, A, it gets quoted a lot, and B, back in the day, a lot of radio stations would play that sound clip about their radio station when they do promos. So you're listening to WMMY. This station is now the most ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Yeah. But, you know, we had an ISB agent in that meeting, Colonel Wolf Ularin. And he didn't seem to engage in that fighting.
But maybe that's because he was playing Tag and Mahdi against each other.
Maybe.
Because it seems like something that the ISB would
probably
do.
Actually, probably, now that I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tradition continues on the dark side to have all the infighting, because you have an almost exact echo of that scene in The Rise of Skywalker when General Pride and the other dudes at the First Order conference table on the finalizer are arguing amongst themselves, and Kylo Ren silences them very similar to the way his grandfather did by hurling somebody into the ceiling.
Well, you know, we had that in The Last Jedi too, with mm-hmm. Captain Kennedy, and Hux, you know, told him, oh, scramble your fighters now. And he's like, we should have scrambled fighters 5 bloody minutes ago.
Yep.
You know, because they didn't want to listen to their elders in the First Order. Anyone with experience was deemed not worth listening to.
Yeah, totally. Well, my answer to question 2 should be super obvious. I also disliked the part of episode 4 where we had all the ISB, but not for the infighting, for the too random to be random logistics analysis, yada, yada, yada. I wouldn't have minded one or two lines about it where she and whatever her assistant's name is quickly jump to the, you know, they get to the conclusion and like, oh, we got to go tell the director about this. But it just sort of went on. And they were like, at a couple of times, they were silently staring at data pads, scrolling through things. And I'm like,
which is realistic, but doesn't make
it is realistic. Television. Yeah. does not make for good television. That's right. And I think that a little bit of the criticism of how there isn't much charisma for certain parts of the show, it could be carried over to that scene. The actress who is portraying Deirdre is doing a great job of playing the role that they have assigned to her, but she has zero charisma in that scene. Like nothing. I felt it was the first time watching a Star Wars production that it felt laborious, that I'm like, okay, I got to get through this so that I can find out what happens next. And also so that I can talk about it on the podcast, but it wasn't thrilling in any way or compelling even.
Which is really weird, because if you sat me down before the episode and said, hey, we're going to have a scene with a whole bunch of ISB agents, I would be like, yeah, sign me up.
Yeah,
That sounds like cool. It could be really interesting. But randomly but it wasn't.
Yeah. Too random.
Too randomly, random. Perhaps.
Yes. Denise Goh is the name of the actress, and she's doing a great job. She's doing a great job of playing a bureaucrat.
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. So for episode 5, the part that I liked the least was probably the troubled teenage daughter scenes with Mon Mothma and her husband and their daughter. I get it. You're the privileged elite, but yet you have your own problems. And, you know, people feel like you spend too much time. Your family feels like you spend too much time working and you don't really care about them. But I'm like, the only teenagers I really want to see in a Star Wars production are the ones that are essentially orphaned and put upon and then have to rise to the occasion to help save the day, like Luke Skywalker or Ezra Bridger, you know, or Sabine, who is very much doing the same thing, not an orphan, but doing the same thing in her own way by helping to save the day.
In a way, she is. She's not orphaned, but mm-hmm. she is definitely out on her own mm-hmm. at an early age.
Yeah. And Ahsoka too, not orphaned per se, but out on her own and then taken in by the Jedi. But you know, not filled with teen angst and in the case of Mon Mothma's daughter, I just was like bristling at the whole you're draped in luxury and a lavish lifestyle, but you're still an insolent teenager. Come on, you know, look around you. There are people starving to death on Naboo or whatever. But that's probably because I'm a dad now and not a teenager anymore. So.
Well, as someone who's closer to being a teenager than you are, let me say, yeah, I don't get it either.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, why the rich and privileged, you know, I don't understand why she's so upset. But now that scene, while I didn't like the family dynamics, what I am slightly interested in about Mon Mothma's family is whether or not her husband is even aware of the whole rebellion thing going on. He seems kind of clueless and not in just the I'm an idle rich kind of way.
Yeah, because he even comes out and asks, you know, why does everything always have to be so boring?
Yeah.
It's like, do you realize what your wife is doing?
Yeah. A bold line on this show, by the way, to talk because comparatively it is more boring than most Star Wars productions, but still well done. You know, I can't get behind the people online who are complaining about how this is a terribly made show. Like, it's not terribly made. It's beautifully made. You may not like the pacing, but you know, it's not badly done.
Which is perfectly fine. There should be Star Wars that people don't like. What I mean by that is Star Wars is big enough that it should have enough genres within Star Wars.
Yes, the variety should be there to where you can pick and choose what you want to be really involved in.
Like Visions. Yeah. I'm not a huge anime guy. Right. I like animated shows like The Clone Wars, but I'm not big into anime. So there's a few of those that I'll go back and watch again, but most of them, I just don't care all that much for them. That doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means that this particular show wasn't made for me. Yeah. And there should be enough Star Wars that everybody has at least something that they like and something that they're like, you know what, that's for somebody else.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah. And this is definitely one of those shows because it's polarizing, you know, and that's fine. It's totally fine. All right, so question number 3. What connections did you draw between this episode and the rest or the other episode and the rest of the Star Wars galaxy?
Well, there's the really big, obvious ones. And honestly, that's most of what I got in this one. We have parallels to the Rebellion through Mon Mothma. We see kind of the early stages of the Rebellion forming. So we know that that's going to get bigger and become a full-fledged Rebellion. And also we have the ISB. You know, we talked a little bit about Wolf Yularen, who we see in the Clone Wars too, but is not Imperial. Well, obviously he's not Imperial, but he's not a spy master in the right. Clone Wars. He's just, you know, serving under the soon to be Darth Vader, unbeknownst to everybody.
Right. Yes.
So those are the big parallels. I will say I went back and watched the first three episodes again and caught something that I hadn't caught the first time. Bix has a pod racer engine in her garage.
Huh. I'll have to go back and look for that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it just looks like a piece of junk at first. But I mean, she's working on it, but I didn't recognize that at first. But on second viewing, I'm like, wait a minute. That is straight up a pod racer engine. Now, it is not Anakin's pod racer engine. It's a different one, but it is definitely pod racer.
Cool.
But just one engine, not the whole racer.
Right. Hey, maybe she's using it to grill Ronto wraps like they do at Uga's Cantina in Galaxy's Edge. They have a pod racer engine pointed down.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's pointed the wrong direction.
She's just putting them on skewers and holding them.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally what happened.
No, it does look a little bit like one of the ones we see in episode one. I'm trying to remember what racer it looked like, but it's not Dud Bolts and it's not Ben Quadraneros. Not Anakin's and not Sebulba's, obviously. It's one of the very minor ones that you lose track of really quickly.
Perhaps it was the Gron guy, the three-eyed dude.
Maybe. But I don't think it was one of the ones specifically from there. It just looks like one of them. But still, I thought that was a cool connection. That is really about it, though. I'm not seeing a whole lot of direct parallels. It's not like Kenobi where we could sit there and pick out, okay, these beats perfectly parallel these things from these movies. Yeah. There's just, you know, enough stuff that ties it to the universe that we know it's Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, I feel like they go out of their way to not have it be super obviously connected to the rest of the saga. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct because we don't even see any lightsabers, and I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, but at least so far.
That's true.
So for me, in episode four, a connection that I saw was the TIE fighter screaming across the sky to basically scare the Rebel strike team back into their unassuming Shepard role. And it reminded me of, I think there's a passage in, what is the name of that novel? The young adult novel. That's the Across Star, Lost Stars. I think that's what it's called. There's a passage where they talk about how the Imperial pilot, who is kind of bored with being an Imperial pilot, one of his major parts of his duties is to take his TIE fighter and fly real low across the plains on that planet he's assigned to remind all the farmers that the Empire's in charge and to basically scare the crap out of them every so often with no warning whatsoever, except that terrifying screech coming out of the sky, you know, because if you've never seen it's a TIE so fighter cool. before, yeah, it's very cool. It's yeah. very iconic.
But for us at home.
Yeah. Yeah. So would he, when they did that, I thought about how, you know, in Lost Stars, there was a scene where he lamented having to do that part of his duty. Oh, basically psychological operations, you know. Mm-hmm.
All right. That, I'm going to try something and we'll see if this works. All right.
Are you screen sharing?
I am screen sharing.
Okay. All right.
Can you see my screen?
I can now that I've added it to the stream.
All right. Well, can you see what's on my screen, or is it a big black box?
All I see is the caption of, on what, a jealous husband?
Okay, well, I'm going to stop sharing then. So apparently, I know some streaming services do this. I can't just show you a picture from the episode itself. But if you go back to the first episode at timestamp 2140, you can see the pod racer engine. Bix and Cassian are talking, and she's going around getting parts for it. And it looks like she's actually got two engines, but they aren't connected to each other.
Oh, maybe she's in the process of building a pod racer.
Seems likely, yeah. Because, yeah, there's another one over there. So, yeah, go check it out. I mean, not right now. Listen to the rest of our podcast. Then go check it out.
Yes, yes. So the other thing that I saw, so in episode 5, the connection that I had to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy was Nimick's manifesto that he was talking about writing. And I'm trying to find the quote that I loved where he's talking to Cassian about how terrible the Empire is. Of course, I cannot find that one quote at this moment in time.
I know what you're talking about, though, where he talks about how, like, their basic freedoms are the ones they take first, and you're like so caught up in that you don't have time to recognize all the other ways that they're restricting your freedoms.
Well, he said, he says the pace of repression outstrips our ability to understand it. It's easier for them to hide behind 40 atrocities than one, horrible occurrence. I had to paraphrase a bit because I can't remember the exact phrasing, but when he says it's easier to hide behind 40 atrocities than one big horrible thing, I was just like, man, this kid absolutely understands the way that dictatorships work and the way that oppressive societies come into being. I often tell my wife these days when she gets concerned about the status of politics in America that the playbook for the authoritarians hasn't changed for thousands of years. And so the stuff that, let's just say, the side in American politics that is trying to be more oppressive is doing is right out of the same playbook that, things like Machiavelli's The Prince were referencing. And so when we see this mentioned in Star Wars, I'm like, this is a great example of how Star Wars has always been political. It was a metaphor for the Vietnam War when it started, but now it's simply a metaphor for the way that societies crumble when they were great functioning democracies or republics in this case. And then somehow an authoritarian came to power and just did everything they wanted to take over as the populace was like, oh yeah, this person's right. I hate all these weird other aliens and people who aren't like me. And, we should scapegoat them and blame all our problems on those guys. And it's okay if they blow up Chinatown because I don't live there and I'm not Chinese or whatever.
Yeah. Which is interesting. He makes that point, but then the Empire itself almost forgets that point, because they do coalesce a whole bunch of power into the ultimate station and commit one gigantic atrocity in blowing up Alderaan.
It makes you wonder what happened between the time of where we are here in Andor, where they're definitely operating on the successful, albeit patently evil, side of the authoritarian playbook. And then somehow that changes and they get their overconfidence is their weakness.
That may be as simple as it is, because, they were this close to greatness.
Yes, exactly. And so you got to wonder, who is it that gets eliminated or killed, a la the First Order, where General Hux in charge when he should never be in charge? Who gets eliminated or killed as part of some type of cronyism on Palpatine's part? And I'm wondering if it's someone like the old dude we saw in charge of the ISB.
It could be. And, you know, another thing it could be is not someone got killed, but it could be Thrawn. Mm. He got taken out of the picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tarkin was important. He was a governor during that time, but he wasn't Grand Moff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, he definitely increased in power between Rebels and A New Hope, or even Rogue One. So I wonder if the absence of Thrawn and the absence of a, you know, strategic genius like Thrawn created a vacuum where Tarkin, who had a very different mentality, could step up and change the way things were done, and not for the Empire's betterment.
For Tarkin's own betterment, but
for not Tarkin's own betterment, yeah. But not the Empire's. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Or it could just be as simple as, like you said, they got overconfident and Palpatine was just like, hey, everything's going like gangbusters. I don't need to worry about keeping it slow. I'm going to put my foot on the throttle and floor it.
I don't have to hide behind atrocities. I just kill them all.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone who dissents will just be evaporated.
No one on Alderaan complained.
That's right.
Afterwards. And, you know, he brought unemployment down to zero.
He did.
No more famine. Yeah, that's certainly putting a certain point of view on things.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Oh, man. Good stuff. I mean, you know, evil stuff, but good evil stuff. And then, of course,
Good bad guys. Yeah, you know?
Right. And certainly within the whole connections to other Star Wars galaxy parts of the Star Wars galaxy, Luthen's antiquity shop is nothing but connections to other parts of the Star Wars galaxy. Yes. I even saw armor in there that was reminiscent of Starkiller's armor from Dark Force Rising. Woo! The Force Unleashed video game, which was such a huge hit back in the day. So that was really cool. Yeah,
that whole shop is just Easter egg after Easter egg. I haven't gone through and broken it all down piece by piece, but I'm sure someone has, and I'm sure whatever video has done it is a long one.
Yes, yes. But this, of course, only makes sense to people out there who understand the term Easter egg. There was a huge debate on Star Wars Twitter recently about such and such is an Easter egg. But no, it isn't. That's not what Easter egg means. With certain people saying, hey, there was an Easter egg in Rogue One. They were building the Death Star. It's a reference to Star Wars.
This is not an Easter egg. To me, Easter egg will always mean that place you can go on the title screen on the DVD that isn't a marked spot.
Yes.
But no. Easter eggs are things that do not affect the plot. If it is
and only makes sense to people who already knew what they were talking about.
Right. Yeah. If it's a plot point, it's not an Easter egg. If it makes sense to everybody, it's not an Easter egg.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Well, Nathan, go ahead for question four.
All right. For question number four, I want to know about Cyril. This is the guy who was very gung-ho on chasing down Andor and seems to still be gung-ho on chasing down Andor, but we don't necessarily know why. So, Scott, I want to know what you think his deal is. Is he going to join the Rebels? Is he going to join the Empire proper? Is he going to do something else entirely? Who's his uncle?
I don't know that last part. I haven't figured that out, but I think his uncle is going to be, if not an Easter egg, at least a connection to part of the Star Wars galaxy that is, you know, cool for people like us who know their ins and outs of Star Wars. To answer the broader question, though, I do think he's going to end up joining the Rebels. I think that he's going to find out that he is basically on the wrong side, as it were. And, he is going to realize that the Empire is not all it's cracked up to be, and he thought he was doing the right thing by being Mr. Law and Order guy, and he's going to realize, hey, this is not what I want to do with my life, you know? And so I think he will end up joining the rebellion. He'll find out that he's on the wrong side, and he wants to actually right wrongs, and so he'll join the rebellion. What do you think?
I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I think he's going to go for the Imperials first. That he's going to say, well, you know, if I can't hack it as a police officer, I should go up to the big leagues, because clearly they didn't recognize my talent. But at some point, you're right, he will recognize, hey, are we the baddies?
Are we the baddies?
It's just that we've got skulls on our helmets.
Yes. Those great skulls, yes.
Mitchell and Webb comedy there. But I think he will recognize that he's on the wrong side. He'll have a chance to kill Andor, but he won't. And that will be kind of his redemption moment. But that somehow he'll get killed, because redemption equals death is definitely a thing in Star Wars.
Yeah.
It happened with Vader. It happened with Kylo Ren. I think it could be happening here with this guy.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Also, I think his uncle is Jabba.
Ooh, that would be amazing.
But not the one you're thinking.
Oh, the big fur coat wearing humanoid Jabba?
No. I do think it might be some gangster.
Yeah.
But probably not Jabba the Hutt, and probably not Ezra pretending to be Jabba.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Ezra pretending to be Jabba would be unbelievably deep cut Easter egg. My friend Jabba. All right. Okay. So finally, question number 5.
All right. So I'm getting real deep on this one. In Rogue One, one of the criticisms that people had was that they didn't feel connected to the characters because they knew all of these characters were going to die. I kind of disagreed with that on the premise, because just because we don't see them in the movies doesn't mean they're going to die. But you know what? They did.
Yeah, they were right.
they were right. And even in the theater, this is one of my favorite stories from watching Rogue One. There's a bunch of girls sitting behind me who, once they realized everyone was going to die, said, "Not Asian Hagrid." Even Asian Hagrid died.
He did. She did. They all did.
They all did. But that is a criticism of Rogue One. Remains a criticism to this day. We just don't necessarily care about these characters. Well, Andor is a prequel as well. Is that influencing how you see these characters? How you see the rebel cell that Cassian is pretending to be Clem is joining, or Luthen himself? Does that play a role in how you are experiencing this show?
Only to the point that I am never, ever worried that Cassian is going to die, because I know he's not. It's kind of like when I watched the prequels. I enjoy the prequels. I think episode 1 is the best of the prequels. I enjoy 2 and 3 for what they are. Attack of the Clones is my least favorite Star Wars movie, but it's still a Star Wars movie, so I like it. But I'm never worried that Obi-Wan or Anakin or Yoda are going to die, because I've seen them in other movies that take place after these movies are over. So the same deal here with Cassian and Mon Mothma to a certain degree.
Right.
I know that Cassian and Mon Mothma are not going to die, and they're not going to get captured and thrown in jail. Or if they do, it will be for a limited amount of time. Yeah, they'll escape, or they'll get out for having served their time or whatever. But now the rest of these people, other than Saw Gerrera, who hasn't shown up yet, but we know is coming, I'm very concerned that they're all going to die. I think that at least one or two of the members of Cassian's heist team this season are going to die, if not everybody but Cassian. I could see the writers having everybody but Cassian die or get trapped or captured, and Cassian breaks free in the freighter all by himself, bursting with credits. And then he really has to be all, oh, what am I going to do with this? Because I could fake my own death and just bail out with, 3 million credits or whatever it is.
True.
Which even then we know he wouldn't, because he's part of the rebellion in Rogue One. But that could be a moment where he has to decide, and the producers give him another character moment of, do I just take the money and run? Go on, take the money and run. Anyway.
Wait, no, we don't want to get canceled for having.
Yeah, we don't want to get censored for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to whoever that was I was covering. Anyway, and so, yeah, that's my thought, is that it does influence the way that I'm watching the show, because I know certain characters are virtually immortal in these stories. What about you?
Yeah, I'm in a similar position. Yeah, Cassian is not going to die. He's not going to have any permanent injuries or anything like that. We know he's got to get to the point where he is in Rogue One. So from that perspective, it does influence it a little bit. And honestly, more than what we had for Rogue One. Because as I mentioned, all of those characters could have survived and just been off screen for the remainder of the movies. Whereas in this case, we know for a fact that at a minimum, Cassian Andor is going to survive. But the rest, we don't know. And we don't know whether they're going to pull off the heist successfully. It may end up being that they just utterly fail. And, you know, it's lessons learned, but no money gained.
You know, Mita said that this whole heist thing and the dialogue between Mon Mothma and Luthen about the money is still there, it's just becoming more dangerous to move it around. She's like, I never really thought about before this where the rebellion got its money and resources. And I'm like, yeah, that was, you know, one of the plot points of Solo is that they're stealing all that coaxium fuel. And, you know, Han and Chewie think it's about getting rich, but really it's about supplying the rebellion with fuel. But she's right, because in other Star Wars movies and shows, the stuff is just sort of there. I mean, it was a plot point in The Last Jedi, and some people even complained about it. They're like, I don't want logistics in my Star Wars, even though there had been a little bit of it earlier in the 1980s, but people didn't really notice it per se.
Well, I mean, even in the original Star Wars, we see them fueling up the X-Wings before they go out and fight. So,
and in our beloved our beloved Star Wars CCG from Decipher, the dark side can play on the poor light side's limited resources, a card that Nathan loves to hate.
That is the exact card that I was thinking of when I thought about the fact that they refueled the X-Wings, because that's the picture, is a rebel technician, you know, pulling the gas line out from the X-Wing, because you know, we got to fuel them up, but we can't put too much fuel in them because we'll run out.
Yep. They could have solved the whole rebellion problem if they just switched to electric starfighters.
Exactly. Wait a minute. No, I don't think that would work.
Solar powered starfighters? Bajoran solar sailing ships. Oh, no. Wrong universe.
Well, you know, I always suspected that we do actually have solar powered starfighters, because that's what the paneling is on the TIE fighters.
There's that, and they are solar panels, yes. And also, they do have solar sailors, because Count Dooku uses one in
Attack of the Clones. That is absolutely true. Yeah. Which it's a little weird, incongruous, I would say, to think about that, because Star Wars is such an analog universe. It's a little weird to have something that digital, so to speak.
The solar panels? Yeah, the solar panel. It's a little too, almost too science fiction for Star Wars. Now, the solar sailor makes perfect sense, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a little bit different. But that one is almost incongruous when it shows up in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense.
Well, remember, when we see it in Star Trek, Sisko and his son, Jake, are doing it as like a project. Like, almost like they're doing Renaissance Fair in space.
They are, but they do get from one planet to another planet. Mm-hmm. And that's weird.
Yeah. Like, but they did it. But I mean, that's.
But that was the whole point.
Yeah. If they had built a. If they had been on Earth or some other aquatic planet and built a sailing yacht and then sailed it from one continent to another just to prove they could do it, not because it's efficient, you know.
Well, anyway, all that to say, yes, there are limited resources. And apparently the Empire is a cash-only business, because everybody's still...
Yeah, what's up with that, about how that nobody does direct deposit or, you know, cryptocurrency, right?
I think direct deposit is just not a thing, which is weird, because banks definitely exist.
What if the reason they're having to do it that way is because the banking clan was part of the separatist movement and Palpatine outlawed them?
You know, that makes sense.
And so now, I mean, it's all
the banking clan did technically have neutrality during the Clone Wars, but I mean, it was the best kind of neutrality, the technical neutrality.
Well, remember that Palpatine, as Darth Sidious, would know that the Banking Clan, while technically neutral, was definitely doing some stuff for the CIS, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you see, Chancellor Palpatine, our other client, Darth Sidious, is telling us this.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I mean, oh, really?
I mean, oh, really?
It's all in the hands.
It's all in the hands. He's just, you gotta put the emphasis on the correct syllable. And then someone, they'll think you're somebody else. You know, glasses on, mild-mannered reporter. Glasses off, world-destroying superhero.
No. Glasses on, mild-mannered chancellor. Glasses off, world-destroying Sith.
But yeah, that would be a really cool thing, is if the reason that it's all, you know, cash only nowadays is because the Banking Clan is no more, and like there isn't a... But there's got to be some kind of unified banking system, because Mon Mothma is talking about moving credits around.
See, I interpreted that as like literally, physically moving credits around.
Oh, yeah, okay. I heard it as a, you know, offshore accounts, you know, I have a unmarked Corellian bank account.
Yeah, no, I've got an unmarked Corellian freighter that has a whole bunch of credits stuffed onto it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're hiding it in plain sight by making people think it's actually a shipment of, I don't know, stuffed Banthas. The Banthas are stuffed. They're just stuffed with credits.
There you go. Yeah, you know, this actually makes a ton of sense when we combine it with the Bad Batch, because the Empire came in and told the cloners on Kamino, you had a contract with the Republic, but the Republic doesn't exist anymore. We're the Empire. As far as we're concerned, that contract is no good.
And they were trying to get everybody, in a different episode, to turn in their Republic credits for new shiny Imperial credits.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was all digital crypto type deal, you wouldn't have to do that. You just push a button and you rebrand everything.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and but like you're saying, it's more the analog currency than digital currency. Mm-hmm. Crypto,
but it could very well be because the Empire said, you know what? We had the Banking Clan, and that's part of the reason we had this whole big civil war between the Separatists and the Republic. So we're outlawing them, and now you've got to use our credits.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. Jot down notes. We're going to make a theory video about this.
Yes, absolutely. And meanwhile, here on Earth, everybody buy crypto, because obviously that's about what liberty is about. Anyway, okay, so that's it for the questions this week. So let's go ahead and do, even though Derek's not here, his favorite part of the show. What Star Wars t-shirts are we wearing this week? And I am wearing the aforementioned Grand Admiral Thrawn, with the cover from the most recent Thrawn books. Just such a beautiful shirt. It's got the big blue guy himself front and center with his cool, you know, Chiss ascendancy icon thing behind him with all the reptilian looking worm deals. And we've heard a rumor recently that Lars Mikkelsen really is going to play the live action Thrawn in the Ahsoka series. It's almost guaranteed that there'll be a live action Thrawn, because he's been name dropped by live action Ahsoka already in The Mandalorian. And Mikkelsen is the dude that did the voice for Grand Admiral Thrawn in Rebels. So having him be the live action Thrawn would be cool, and it would give me another reason to keep wearing this awesome t-shirt. Nathan, what you got on?
And just to jump in there right quick, like physically he can do it. He looks enough like Grand Admiral Thrawn to, you know, you put blue paint on him, he will look like Thrawn. You mentioned the Star Wars celebration in Chicago and how it snowed there.
Yep.
I am wearing a shirt from Star Wars Celebration Chicago.
Nice.
This is the Max Rebo Band. We're on a mission from Jabba.
Good times.
It's a nice Blues Brother reference there, since this was in Chicago. I am really loving wearing the shirt. It is one of the baseball tees that has the longer sleeves. It's great for this time of year where it's a little bit cooler. So I don't necessarily want to wear short sleeves, but it's not so cold that I want to wear the long sleeves.
Right.
So for this maybe 2 or 3 day period of the year, I can wear this shirt.
Yes. Awesome. Well, if you guys out there want to get your own cool What a Piece of Junk t-shirt or mouse pad or coffee mug or merchandise from any of the other Fandom Podcast Network shows, just head over to tpublic.com and search up Fandom Podcast Network to find our stuff there. And Nathan, let folks know where they can find the show out there on the old interwebs.
What is this a test? Do you not know?
You don't know how
to do if I wasn't co-hosting with you.
You don't know how the podcasting works, do you?
Well, you can find us pretty much anywhere you get podcasts. That would include Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and probably some others that I'm forgetting about. But lots of different places you can find us. You can also find us on Facebook, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. Derek runs the Facebook page. Even though he's not here with us tonight, he is still running that. Yeah. You can also email us at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. Scott monitors that inbox, and he will respond and or bring your email onto the show.
Yeah.
You can also catch us on Twitter at What Wars, or you can follow the entire Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network. Scott, Apple Podcasts and their reviews. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, of course, we want everybody out there to give us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts because that's how we feed all of these Wookiee children. And if we don't feed them, their parents will rip our arms out of their sockets. But we also understand the need for you to be honest. So if you don't feel that we deserve 5 stars, give us however many stars you think we do deserve, and then let us know what we can do to make the show more enjoyable for you and yours. Because we do this so that hopefully you guys can listen to it and have a good time enjoying Star Wars with us. So there you have it. We want to thank you for joining us for this episode. We hope that you have enjoyed listening to our pontifications about episodes 4 and 5 of Star Wars Andor, and we will be back very soon with some thoughts about episode 6 as we continue this journey toward the heist and making sure that we fight for something that matters. So remember, hit us up with your thoughts or comments about each episode. Whatever we can do to make this podcast more enjoyable, we want to do it. Please always respect each other and always respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan, punch it.